You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Well, now the results of the presidential election in just 14 weeks from today, assuming no repeats of Florida 2000, and Donald Trump has said that he's afraid the election's going to be rigged. Donald Trump may be one of the most unlikely candidates for the presidency ever, which may be part of his appeal to some. Joining us now is Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist David K. Johnston, who's been reporting on Trump for almost 30 years. His latest book, The Making of Donald Trump, is published by Melville House, and I'm very pleased it has brought David K. Johnston back to our show. Welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me again. This is like 24 years after the first time.
Yesterday, President Obama said that Trump is unfit to serve as president. Has Trump responded directly to that?
I don't know. I've been so busy working on the book, I don't know. But I'm sure Donald, in his own mind, believes he would be the greatest president ever.
And I think he said that Obama has been a disaster. Are you aware of any other time when a president has made such a comment while still in office?
No. And I think one of the big things we're going to see over the next 14 weeks is what Republicans are going to do, and I'm a registered Republican, about Donald Trump. I said right after he announced in June of 2015 that he might get the nomination, and I said, if he does, it will be the end of the modern Republican Party as we know it, just as the Whigs went away in 1856.
When he says he's afraid the election's going to be rigged, is he trying to incite opposition in the event that he loses?
Well, he's trying to avoid having to acknowledge, if he doesn't win, that he's a loser.
He told a supporter, don't abide by the results if I don't win.
Yeah. Donald has, in various ways, sought to stoke violence, racial enmity. He'll deny all of this, even as he does it. And it should be very deeply disturbing to us. You and I grew up in the Cold War era. Imagine if in the 60s, 70s, 50s, a presidential candidate had suggested that a foreign power, particularly Moscow, hack some Americans' emails. The chorus would be overwhelming, not the silence.
Doesn't it come as a bit of a surprise in another way? Because he had such a good relationship with Roy Cohn, who was McCarthy's sidekick and the leading anti-communist in this country.
Yes, but Donald's relationship with Roy Cohn was about using Roy's mob clients, the heads of the Genovese and Gambino families, among others, to make him money by ensuring labor peace, by allowing him to hire non-union illegal immigrant Polish workers at $4 an hour who worked alongside union workers. The ratio was about 10 Polish guys to 10 to one union worker, and other financial deals. That was his relationship with Roy as his mentor and sort of second father.
What about gambling? Because the mob has always been involved with gambling. In fact, the mob made Las Vegas.
Well, I came to Atlantic City in 1988 where I met Donald Trump because I believed we were going to see the third wave of gambling in America and it would spread across the country, which it did, and I met him right away. And I wanted to write about, did the state of New Jersey really successfully regulate to keep the mob out? They did a very good job in a lot of ways, but in the case of Donald Trump, they failed to fully investigate him. He only had a 5-month investigation. He had been the subject of 4 different grand jury investigations that he concealed right until the last moment, which should have disqualified him. And once he was licensed, his relationships with a major drug trafficker he sought leniency for, his relationships with various mobsters came to light, his cheating in one of the empty box scandals, the Bulgari one where you send an empty box out of state to evade the state income tax came to light. The state of New Jersey's Division of Gaming Enforcement made sure it never asked a question that would force them to recommend the removal of Donald's license. They were just masterful at avoiding the obvious question in the room. The first time I was on your show, I wrote a book about that. Well, there were 2 things going on. One is, remember, New Jersey has the most powerful governor in America by far. The Division of Gaming Enforcement to have gone after Donald's license for a number of things would have meant they would have to admit that they messed up the first time. And the bureaucratic imperative always is you didn't do anything wrong as a bureaucracy.
But he confused Tim Kaine with the former governor of New Jersey, Tom Kaine. Tom Kaine didn't have a good relationship with him?
He had he had some relationship with him, but I don't like gaffes. I don't like going after politicians because you missaid something. I've missaid things on watched on the tape later on TV and gone, oh, no, wrong word. But Donald
confusing
didn't
two
do it just
governors.
Once. Yes, he said Tim Kaine, he confused Virginia and New Jersey, and Tom Kean and Tom Kaine, who are very different in age. And that goes to something very important voters need to understand about Donald. Donald is in no way a serious person. He doesn't know anything. And in the book, I cite examples from testimony where he gives answers that make it clear he has no idea the things that he talks about. They're gibberish, his answers.
How much of the past 20 years or so has Trump been as much an entertainment figure as a developer?
Oh, he's hardly done any development in years. And people who bought into a number of Trump buildings in Hawaii, Baja California, Florida, who thought that Donald Trump was the developer. They got statements either calling him the builder or the developer. He did promotional videos. People follow me because I'm Donald Trump and they know what great buildings I do. And that said developer Donald Trump. They found out later that he was simply a licensee of his name. And in one case, the Hawaii case, there had to be renewals of the right to use his name. And he could have just snatched it away with no reason and built a building next door calling it Trump, which would reduce the value of your investment. We have a word to describe that kind of stuff, fraud, civil fraud.
Now, he has complained about how the media have written about him, but have the news media missed important elements of his story?
Yeah, Leonard, I have been from the get-go critical of the coverage of Donald Trump. I wrote a piece for the National Memo last July, 21 questions for Donald Trump for journalists to ask him. Two of them were eventually asked, one by Marco Rubio and the other by Ted Cruz. But journalists are not asking him the tough questions, and they're not following up, with some rare exceptions. The other day when he recommended that or suggested that the Russians hack Hillary Clinton's email, Katie Tour of MSNBC got right on him and said, "Are you serious?" And then again said, "Are you sure? Doesn't this give you pause?" The next day, Trump goes, "I was being sarcastic." So what are all the news accounts that follow? Trump said he was being sarcastic. You don't get to double and triple down that you're serious, and then when you get in trouble for it, wipe it away by saying it was a joke.
You say that you met him first because of Atlantic City.
Mm-hmm.
What was your first impression of him?
P.T. Barnum. I had met the modern P.T. Barnum, and he was selling us the Fiji Mermaid. But there was something about him that seemed a little bit off, and I didn't know what it was. And I began interviewing people in Atlantic City, both other casino executives, Steve Wynn, a successful casino operator, and some of Trump's own people, and what everybody and fellow journalists. And they all started telling me, Donald doesn't know anything about the casino business. All he knows how to do is to extract money. And so one of the first times we met, I did something investigative reporters often do. I made an untrue statement to him while asking a question. He immediately incorporated the falsehood into his answer and tried to run with it. That's what these fake psychics you see advertised on daytime TV and con artists do.
And Marco Rubio called him a con artist.
Yes, I think he is. I think that he is essentially a con artist who has spent his entire adult life associating with, doing business with, and going to bat for con artists, swindlers, mob associates, mobsters, and this major cocaine trafficker.
We'll get to that major cocaine trafficker in just a second. My guest is David K. Johnston. The Making of Donald Trump is his latest book. Why would he even have anything to do with a major cocaine trafficker?
Well, this guy, Joseph Wechselbaum, a convicted felon, had a helicopter business, and he maintained Donald's personal helicopter, the Ivana, and he maintained his fleet of helicopters for his Atlantic City casinos. And Wechselbaum ran a drug smuggling operation that went from the Miami, Florida area to Cincinnati. He was indicted. The court record shows that he personally handled the drugs and often put them in vehicles, and he said shipments of up to 1,500 pounds that are in the indictment. God, who knows how big they may have been. He asked that his case be transferred when he was going to plead guilty either to Miami, where it originated, or New York City, where he lived. And instead, mysteriously, it went to New Jersey, where it came before a federal judge named Marianne Trump Berry, his sister. Now, she recused herself from the case, but you think about it. Imagine you're the chief judge, and one of your judges walks into your relatively newly appointed judge and says, you know, I have to get myself out of this case because my husband, who's a lawyer for Donald Trump, flies in this man's helicopters. I fly in his helicopters many times, have flown in them. Imagine the potential disaster for the federal judiciary that it's got a sitting federal judge flying around in helicopters from a drug dealer. Well, the little fish in this case, they got up to 20 years. What did Joe Wechselbaum get after Donald Trump wrote a letter pleading for mercy for him and saying he's a stand-up guy? He got 18 months. He served 18 months. He got 3 years.
From your description of Trump's father and grandfather, it sounds like con artistry might run in the family.
Yes. Donald's grandfather, when he turned 16 and faced mandatory military service in Germany, left in the middle of the night and came to the United States. He followed Horace Greeley's advice and went west. And in Seattle, Everett, Washington, and the Yukon Territory, he ran whorehouses, made a fortune, came back to Germany, married a young woman over his mother's objections, came to New York. They had a baby girl. She hated New York. He went back to Germany, and the Germans said, "We don't care how much money you brought with you, pal. You dodged the draft. Get out of Germany." He died in the influenza pandemic in 1918 when his only son, Fred, was a teenager. 2 years after his death, Fred and his mother had a business, and a very industrious guy, Fred Trump. He was building, as a teenager, garages for these newfangled thing called automobiles. He built, started building houses in the 20s when the economy collapsed in 1929. He was innovative and started one of the first groceries where you pull your own stuff off the shelf, which reduced the labor costs and quickly sold that for a bit of money. And then when World War II came along, he built military housing for civilian workers for the military. And after the war, was reportedly the first person in line at the Federal Housing Administration to get loans to build housing for GIs.
It's also been reported that he was arrested at a KKK rally in 1927. Has that ever been confirmed?
Oh, absolutely. Donald has said, you shouldn't write about this. It really didn't happen. My father wasn't charged. So even if it did happen, you know, that he was no charge, you shouldn't write about it. The fact is that all the newspapers that reported on at the time gave the same address. It is the address that public records show was occupied by his father, Fred Trump, even though Donald said, my father never lived at that address. He was not charged, nor were most of the other people. The police arrested him and made a record, and then the city didn't prosecute them.
But however vile Fred Trump's views might have been, what relevance do they have now?
Well, because Donald has followed through in those approaches. There was rampant discrimination against blacks and Puerto Ricans in many of the Trump buildings. They had certain buildings where they would steer people. And in 1972, the federal government sent out housing test teams. So they would have a black person or couple go out, and they would have a story and documentation on their finances, they're employed, they qualified. If they were told there was no apartment or they were steered to one of these buildings, a white tester with the exact same financial information would show up, and they'd be told, oh, we have lovely apartments for you. Would you like this one or this one or this one? When the federal government, under the Housing Act that was passed just days after Martin Luther King's assassination, came after them, Roy Cohn drafted a lawsuit attacking the federal government, and Donald said they're trying to force us to put people on welfare in our buildings. Lawsuit had nothing to do with welfare. It had to do with flat-out racial discrimination. If I can just finish this point, Leonard, for 2 years they were under supervision. They behaved perfectly. The supervision ended. The government sent out new teams. Guess what? They went right back to discriminating against blacks and Puerto Ricans.
Didn't Woody Guthrie even mention Trump in a variation of one of his songs?
He wrote a song, and the Guthrie family, bless their souls, made it possible for me to have the lyrics in my book, The Making of Donald Trump.
And the book is called The Making of Donald Trump by David K. Johnston, formerly of the New York Times, winner of the 2001 Pulitzer Prize for Journalism, now teaching at Syracuse University College of Law, and sued by Donald Trump how many times?
Oh, haven't ever been sued. Donald did call me in April, and it was the typical Donald call I've gotten at home in the past. Hail fellow, well met, seeking a little information, romance, how, you know, I like you, menace, I'm going to sue you, and click.
The book is published by Melville House. We'll continue our conversation after this. We're back with David K. Johnston, whose latest book is The Making of Donald Trump. It is published by Melville House. Before he announced his presidential campaign, how much about political or business experience did he have? Did it amount to more than making headlines?
Well, Donald has more than 500 business entities, partnerships, licensing of his name.
So he has clout.
Well, he has a lot of business entities. he certainly has political clout. I mean, Donald's father's best friend was Abe Beame, and when Abe Beame was mayor, as the Libby Handros documentary Donald suppressed called Trump the Movie, and if I have the name wrong, forgive me, there's a city official who says, Mayor Beame says, whatever Donald Trump wants, he gets in this city. And, of course, he got a $400 million tax break. Donald's one of the biggest welfare recipients in America.
When did he first hint at a desire for elective office?
1985.
Had his father ever considered it?
Not that I know of. His father had some showmanship. When he destroyed the steeplechase ride at Coney Island, he hired women in what in the day were pretty scandalous pink bikinis to hand out bricks so people could throw them at the clown face and destroy it. But Donald, in 1988, proposed that he be George H.W. Bush's running mate. In 2000, he ran on the Reform Party ticket and bragged he'd be the first person ever to make a profit. And then when he ran in 2012, everybody treated this seriously except Lawrence O'Donnell and I, who separately realized he was negotiating a better contract with NBC.
Christopher Buckley wrote an acceptance speech, a presidential acceptance speech for Donald Trump in the year 2000 that was published in the Wall Street Journal. And he really captures the spirit of Donald Trump's speech, even though the sentences are too complete. But it is quite hilarious. So there was serious talk about him perhaps running for president at that point.
Well, yes. And by the way, I wrote my weekly column for the Daily Beast. I wrote a speech for Donald and said, this is the speech that could get you elected, mm-hmm. which is put out your tax returns. They're going to show you paid no taxes. And then you say to the public, this is an outrage. And lots of very, very wealthy people, billionaires like me, not necessarily that he's a billionaire, don't pay income taxes because of special rules you've never heard of unless you read David K. Johnston's books. And this is awful. And elect me, and you know what? People like me are going to pay taxes, and you're going to pay less. And he could probably get elected with that speech.
Donald Trump, Michael Bloomberg, Mitt Romney, Meg Whitman, Carly Fiorina, in the past, Nelson Rockefeller. What is it about business executives and elected office?
I don't think Donald fits the same pattern as these other people. There certainly is a lot of ego. Anybody who wants to run for president of the United States has to have a pretty big ego. But in Donald's case, you have to understand that in his own mind, Donald is the greatest person around. And either you respect and glory in Donald's greatness and worship it, or he has a word for you. Loser. Mm.
You wrote about how the wealthy enrich themselves at our expense in your book, Free Lunch. Is Trump blowing the cover?
Not really, because he doesn't say anything substantive about stuff. If you listen to Donald carefully, you'll notice that he talks like a con artist, a huckster. He doesn't really say anything specific. And if he gets in trouble for what he does, he just says, I didn't really mean to say that. Or he denies that he said it, even though, you know, who are you going to believe, your lying ears and eyes or Donald Trump?
How does his record in business compare with that of some of the other super rich who have run for office? Because they've all run on the idea that they can run government in the same efficient way they've run their businesses.
Well, of course, we don't want government run like business. First of all, we want it to be accountable. But Donald was evaluated by Fortune magazine some years ago, along with 495 other publicly traded companies when he had his casino company. Donald came in either dead last or nearly last in every category, quality of management, return on assets, turnover, et cetera. And in
he's
his own
declared
industry,
bankruptcy several times.
He has never
Should
declared
bankruptcy. He hasn't?
No. The casino company he founded went through, while he was there, four bankruptcies, in each of which he extracted millions of dollars while stiffing vendors. The residue that was left, there were two more bankruptcies that flowed out of Donald's utter mismanagement. And Donald, by the way, also has a history of firing the most competent executives and replacing them with yes men, and in at least one case, falling down drunks.
There are a number of wealthy business people who have declared in many cases, Republicans who have declared that they're going to they're endorsing Hillary Clinton. And on Monday, Warren Buffett challenged Trump to discuss tax returns. What do we know about his history on taxes, either personally or through his companies?
Well, we know, and I reported this in my first book when you had me on 24 years ago, Temples of Chance, about casinos, that Donald paid ordinary income taxes for the few years after he graduated from college. And then in 1978, his income went negative, and he paid no income taxes. He paid none in 1979. And we know that he paid no taxes in 92 and 94. He probably has paid no income taxes in decades or maybe 1 or 2 years. But the most important year was 1984. That was the year that Donald's income exploded. Trump Tower opened in December and the early of 83 and the early part of 84, huge cash flow. His first casino opened just before the summer gambling season in Atlantic City. And yet Donald filed with the state of New York and the city of New York what are called Schedule C tax returns, so what freelancers, independent sole proprietors file. Zero income, over $600,000 in losses. He was asked to substantiate him. Couldn't do it. He ordered his tax lawyer and accountant, Jack Mitnick, to file appeals. There were trials held. In the city trial, Jack Mitnick was shown the only tax return anybody could find, which was a photocopy. Nobody could find the original. And he looked at it and said, well, that's my signature, but neither I nor my staff prepared that tax return. And the judge in that case and the state case both said, you know, this is just bizarre. Why there weren't further proceedings, I don't know. It also came out in one of these cases that Donald paid no federal income tax that year. So we know for an absolute certainty of at least 5 years since 78 with none. But in all likelihood, because of a variety of circumstances I read about in the book, he has probably not paid income taxes in years.
Mitt Romney also worked to keep his income taxes concealed. But when they were revealed, it hurt him in the election. Donald Trump has said he could shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue and it wouldn't hurt him.
I think saying you could shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue should hurt a lot. Mitt Romney withheld from us the returns that I think he should have released when he was the sole owner. He wasn't just the manager, but the sole owner of Bain Capital Management. Special federal tax rules, and that's what I teach at Syracuse University is tax law, allowed him to live tax-free. And in all likelihood, he did. That's why I suspected we'd never see his returns.
Bloomberg Business Week recently reported on possible violations of U.S. trade embargo on in Cuba by the Trump Organization. Have you followed that at all?
Well, I mentioned it in one of my columns. It came out after my book. Donald's golfing enterprise has repeatedly sent people down to Cuba hoping to make a deal. And without – you can go to Cuba, but you have to get proper authorizations to do so, and you can't engage in trade. Understand that Donald is a man whose entire life he has flouted the law and gotten away with it. Well, why would you behave any differently because you're running for president if your life experience is that you actually get rewarded and make money for not obeying the law?
The Justice Department sued him in 1973. What was that about?
That was the housing material we talked about earlier where he claimed that it was a welfare issue when it was not.
NPR reported yesterday that some former Justice Department officials worry that President Trump might interfere with law enforcement. Hasn't the Trump Organization had confrontations with law enforcement in the past?
Yeah, one of Donald's greatest skills, and I admire Donald for this in a strange way, is deflecting, shutting down law enforcement investigations, many of them, and I describe a number of them in the book, journalistic investigations and litigation by others. And he's really very masterful at recognizing when the game is up and figuring out how to somehow shut off the investigation before it ruins what he's up to.
My guest is David J. Johnston, David K. Johnston, C-A-Y. His latest book, The Making of Donald Trump, published by Melville House. This is WMIC, WMIC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. A listener has called in to ask how you'd respond to Trump supporters who dismiss factual accounts as liberal propaganda.
Well, yeah, for 40 years in this country, we've had a well-funded campaign to attack journalists who do honest work. And my answer to that would be, I use Donald's own words, his sworn testimony, his writings, his speeches, his interviews. In the back of the book, I not only have very extensive endnotes, but I give you my personal email. If you can't find one of these documents or you want something more, I'll put my time into showing you. But it is really damaging to a democracy that we have people who believe that these various disreputable and well-documented promoters of fake news and falsehoods and who gin up huge stories, and then if something happens, they have to get away with it. We'll make, you know, one disclosure at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on TV or in the back pages. Have credibility with people. They shouldn't. And, you know, verification is the first step in journalism. I've lectured on four continents. I'm the former head of Investigative Reporters and Editors, my professional association, about the most fundamental job as a journalist is check it out. If your mother says she loves you, check it out. But then you have to cross-check and cross-check and cross-check until you have bolted the facts down and you've put them in their proper place in the universe. So you're not turning, you're not taking shotguns to a gnat.
After Clint Eastwood's rather confused chat with a chair in 2012, a Republican official said something like, "He's Clint Eastwood. You don't question him." How does Trump take advice or feedback? And does he ever admit mistakes or apologize?
Well, in the first part, the only person who appears to have influence with Donald is his daughter, Ivanka. I haven't seen them interact, but he has said things, and we've seen things happen, and other people have talked about that she has at times gotten him to tone it back. Nobody else has any influence on his thinking, and I've interviewed a number of his former executives and lawyers who've jousted with him, and they all are consistent that Donald does what he wants to do. And there was a second part to your question that was very important, Leonard. I'm sorry.
The second part was, does he ever make mistakes?
Oh, yes.
To making mistakes. Does he ever apologize? Does he think he ever makes
mistakes? Yes. Donald, who goes around saying that I'm a Christian and no one reads the Bible more than Donald Trump, even though he can't cite accurately anything in the Bible, has also said, well, no, I've never asked God for forgiveness. I've never done anything asking for forgiveness that would require it. I've never done anything wrong. That is an astonishing statement for someone who says they're a Christian.
And we have seen some of that with the whole matter of sacrifice and then this Purple Heart incident. A veteran gave Trump his Purple Heart yesterday. Don't the very voters who most support the military also support Donald?
Well, you'll notice that the big dog, the American Legion, has been silent about this, which I'm the son of a 100% disabled veteran of World War II who went to college on the GI Bill's War Orphans Act provisions. And I will acknowledge in this case, I'm offended by his remarks about this. But I'm shocked that we haven't seen the American Legion, like the Veterans of Foreign Wars and other groups, step forward about this, particularly when Donald has said in the past, well, I really did serve in the military, because he was sent to a military academy by his father because he was a troublemaker and what was called back when you and I were in school, maladjusted. But that also goes to the fact that Donald doesn't know anything. I have three questions I've written down for Donald and three for Hillary. And if one of the TV networks were to put me on to debate, they're short, brief questions. His are really easy. Hers are really tough. And I'm
willing
sure
to share them with us?
No, when the election's over. I will post them on my eponymous website when the election's over, because the point is to ask them out of the blue. And Hillary's these are tough questions. His are really soft, and I don't think he can answer them.
Well, we saw a really odd response to George Stephanopoulos when they talked a bit about the annexation of Crimea and what's going on in the Ukraine.
If Donald were on a TV show and the host were to suddenly on the green screen behind them throw up a map of the world and say, Donald, just where's Crimea? With nothing on the map, just the outlines of even countries. I doubt that Donald could find Crimea.
This is not the first candidate who would have those problems.
Was
there a similar thing said about George W. Bush?
But the difference here is that Donald tells you that he is all-knowing and all-wise. Donald says, I know more about ISIS, whose correct name is ISIL, than the generals do. Donald creates his own reality. He just makes stuff up. And what I do in the book is take his own words and show you who he is and what he's done along the line of F. Scott Fitzgerald's famous observation in The Last Tycoon, action is character. Here's what he said. Here's what he did. What does that tell you about him? And then draw your own conclusions. You want to vote for him after that? Fine. But know who you're voting for.
The New York State, you talked earlier about that whole business with the Bulgari, shipping empty boxes to Roy Cohn's home in Connecticut. Weren't fake shipments out of state for valuable purchases fairly common?
Oh, they still are. There's a current case going on right now. This is a continuing scandal involving the big jewelers in New York. But what's different about Donald is that when this story didn't appear on the front page of the New York Times or the Daily News or the Post, it appeared in the Village Voice. One of Wayne Barrett's acolytes, he was training, Bill Bastone, broke the story. And when Donald found out the investigation was underway, he did what he often does. Henry Kissinger did this, you know, Mary Tyler Moore did it. Donald ran to law enforcement and offered to rat out other people. And, of course, if he had been indicted in that case, he would have lost his casino license. Mayor Ed Koch, who Donald denigrates all the time, when the prosecution was finished of the owner, who's an Italian, and the store manager, said, this is an outrage. The customers should go to jail. 15 days will do the trick, but the customers, because that'll stop this bad practice.
Some have raised concerns about how the elite are treated differently under the law. Didn't you touch on that in Free Lunch?
Oh, in all my books. In all my books.
So we see photos of Trump with Bill and Hillary Clinton, Michael Bloomberg, Ed Koch, and others. Was he on good terms with all of them at one point or another?
Sure. And when it was convenient for Donald, he was on good terms with anybody he wanted to be. He has funneled money to people. I tell about how his charitable foundation made a political contribution to the Attorney General of Florida, who shut down her investigation of Trump University. He should lose the charitable status of his foundation for this, particularly because they engaged in what I think was a scheme to hide what they really did. And, of course, law enforcement will often look the other way if you acknowledge what you did wrong, or they'll give you a slap on the wrist. You start lying to a federal agent, even if you're not under oath, that's a crime.
Everything you've said, although you've given us more detail in some cases, has been discussed in the past. And every day seems to bring a new revelation. We hear the latest also about how he got out of the draft. And yet it doesn't seem to have had much of an impact on the people who are who are wearing shirts with his image on them.
So I would suggest, Leonard, that there are two groups of people who are really supporting Donald Trump. One of them are the people whom I have been trying to champion for more than 20 years, the bottom 90% of Americans whose incomes adjusted for inflation last year were essentially the same as they were in 1967, the year I finished high school. The rules of our economy have been taking subtly from the many to give to the already rich few. That's what Free Lunch particular was about, of my books. And these people don't understand what's happened to them unless they've read my books, and they are looking for an answer. And Donald, like all demagogues, has provided a simple answer. The second thing, though, is that Donald's entire campaign is predicated on racism and xenophobia. The parents of the dead United States Army captain killed in combat. Donald, instead of saying, I respect your son, says, Islamic terrorism. Outrageous thing for him.
Suggested that they are connected to the Muslim Brotherhood.
Oh, yes. And that's because, I'm not going to make any bones about it, Donald is a racist. His conduct shows that he is a racist. He says he's not. It doesn't matter what you say. It is your conduct that matters. And Donald's record is very clear here.
David K. Johnson is an investigative journalist, winner of the 2001 Pulitzer Prize for Journalism, who's with the New York Times for a long time, and also is the former president of Investigative Reporters and Editors, currently teaching at Syracuse University College of Law. His latest book, The Making of Donald Trump, is published by Melville House. Thank you so much for being on our show again.
Leonard, thank you.